What are we starting?
Happy New Year, everybody! And things have not changed here on Easy Street. We're on Easy Street to be specific. My name is Kelly Turner, and in 2023, guess what?
Oh no, not still.
I'm still not a doctor.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
And Katie Givens, still not a lawyer. New Year, same us.
Yeah, that's right. I think we get a whole other year.
Yes. Yes.
I think we get a whole other year.
At least. Oh, yeah. Lawyer, no so. Worries.
We have been having a great time in the studio for the last 30 minutes before Katie hit the button.
Yes, we have.
We have been having a great time. I wish we had recorded all of what we were just talking about, but we'll do that soon.
We will. We've got some fun stuff prepared for you for season 3. We've got some new interesting ways to do things this year.
Yeah, we have to wear costumes now, Kelly has just told me. Nobody's going to know, but apparently have to wear a costume every Sunday.
Every time we record, I'm going to see you in your uniform, Scott.
I'm going to look like a Steeler fan.
No, so welcome back. I hope everybody had a safe and happy New Year 2023. Wow. What are we going to do this season?
How are we going to top what we've done already?
Oh, we're going to.
We are, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm excited. This is I'm already saying that this season is my favorite season, and we're on episode 1.
So season 4 is going to be a shit show.
Yeah, definitely.
After what we do this year.
Yeah. I'm
all right, stick around, everybody.
We're just going to go for everything. Season 3 and then season 4, who cares?
We'll worry about that when we get there.
On season 4.
That's right. No,
we will cross that bridge when we get there.
We will. But I'm excited about some new things. So make sure you listen to all of our episodes. Mm-hmm. We were talking about what number of episode this is. Katie, did you say this is 89?
89.
This is episode 89.
So we talk a lot.
Yeah, if you go back to season 1 and you start, you know, with the age of 17. And
yes.
You come all the way to today. This is episode 89. So as we barrel towards our 100th
episode. Are we barreling?
We're barreling.
Okay.
Full speed ahead.
Full speed towards
out of control.
Our 100th episode. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Did you guys think we would do this 100 times? When we started this,
I thought you guys were going to fire me after the 5th episode, and I'm still here, and I don't know why.
Well, we did have a meeting.
I don't doubt that at all.
Your contract is a little too...
so in the air right now.
Yeah, you definitely had a good lawyer figure that out. So.
Well, then you know that it wasn't Shane Gibbons.
He's in this building somewhere. Be careful. Yeah.
Being a lousy lawyer, wherever he is.
Well, thank you guys for joining us back. Hopefully you're not hungover.
If I'm being honest, I am.
It's a Wednesday, so if you're still hungover, I mean.
Oh yeah, when you're listening to this, yeah.
Let's think about having no alcohol January if you're still hungover.
Oh yeah, you can join me with my dry January. We'll keep you.
Are you doing dry January?
Dry January,
really?
Yes.
Nice.
Well, I look forward to the challenge of making you screw that up.
I got a lot of willpower.
I'm here for you, Katie. I'm here for you.
I don't have like a problem. I think I'll be fine. This is just a health and wellness journey.
I love that. So that's good. So, Scott, what did you do for New Year's Eve?
I had dinner at Easy Street with a friend of mine, and then I was home by 9 o'clock. We did karaoke in front of the YouTube channel on our television set, and before we knew it, it was 1:30 in the morning, and we had missed the whole damn thing.
You missed. Yes. New Year's.
Because we were singing karaoke
into the microphone, and when I say microphone, it was the remote control that I was holding. But I do that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, come over anytime, late at night. That's usually what I'm doing.
We sort of missed the New Year, too, because we were at Easy Street, and the band was counting down, but the TVs were up, too, with whatever ball drop was happening at the time, and the TV was not synced right with the actual time. It was a little behind. And so we're watching the TV and we're like, the band's off. And Shane and I are looking at each other. And then we missed the whole thing. And I was like, oh, it is midnight.
So we all missed New Year's. Well, Katie and I did. Kelly, bring us home.
Okay, well, so I had a pretty boring New Year's, but it was really
more boring than mine.
Yeah, it was nice. We stayed at home and my husband, my son and myself. We were at home.
Yeah.
The 17-year-old had other plans.
Okay. Yeah. So, and your husband is just a ball of fun. So I can't wait to see how this ends.
So we cooked dinner. We watched football literally all day.
Okay.
Watched football.
You're a football fan.
Yeah, and there were some really good games on.
Oh yeah, great games yesterday.
Yes.
Or
yes.
New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm. And we saw the New York New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Which is an hour ahead.
Right. Eastern time. We're mm-hmm. Central time.
So then KT's like, I'm out of court event. Yeah.
I can't believe you made it that.
So Nate and I stayed up. And we saw the New Orleans the Fleur-de-Lis.
Yes.
Nice.
And so, I think that's how you say that, but I probably butchered it.
I think
you've nailed it.
Yeah.
So, we watched that, which New Orleans is on the same time. We are. So
right.
We got to see that. I think I ended up going to bed about 12:30. But Nate and I were just hanging out. It was
Nate is your son who is, how old is he?
He's 13.
13.
Yeah, so we had a...
He's a good kid.
Yeah, we had a good time.
I don't know how he's a good kid, because I know his dad, but whatever.
I've enjoyed watching the recap of the Miley Cyrus New Year's Eve show. That's my new favorite. This is the second year she's done it in Miami.
Me.
What?
Tell me.
Oh, yeah, like she her co-host this year was Dolly Parton. And so they did a lot of duets, and then they brought on other musical guests. And so I've just been watching, the TikTok recaps this morning. And
oh, that's awesome.
It's a good show.
I'm sure it was. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong with Dolly.
No.
I think I have a little bit of a crush on Miley Cyrus. I'm not going to lie to you.
So I watched something on Netflix over the holidays because I just really didn't do a whole lot. My kitchen flooded because we had a pipe bust. And
right.
So my kitchen is a little bit in disarray. So I was like, you know what? Forget it.
Isn't that pretty standard at your house, though?
Yeah. Forget it. I'm gonna go in the, what we call the game room and watch, stream stuff through the PlayStation. And
all right, bring it. Well,
so
you
that's
got,
what I did.
Bring me something new.
I watched a very Murray Christmas. It's like Bill Murray. It's old. I think it's a few years old.
Okay.
But.
Is it funny?
He makes me laugh.
Okay.
And he just.
Yeah.
He uttered literally two sentences, and I was already laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. But he had Miley Cyrus on there, too, so that's what made me think about it.
Random.
So I watched that, and I binged the entire season on Netflix again. Netflix is not a sponsor, but they could be.
They could be if they want to.
Yeah. I binged the entire season of The Recruit on Netflix.
I've seen the first two episodes. I like it. It's good. I really like that.
Good TV.
Yeah,
good
that's the one where the he's the lawyer who is dropped into the middle of the CIA.
Yep.
And doesn't really know what's going on, and so we learn with him how that works.
Yep.
And I've seen the first two, but yeah, I'm going to finish that up. You know what? I'm going to do it tonight.
It's really good. Really good
after
TV.
The Steelers.
There's only like 8 episodes, but now they are like 52 minutes each.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's an investment.
Absolutely.
Of time, but it was good. So that's kind of what I did over the break.
I did much the same thing. I watched a lot of television. Katie, anything new that you want to?
I didn't
tell
really.
About?
I was gonna say, I didn't really. I don't have a Christmas break really.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I've been off from school, but you know, I've been. We work. We did close a couple of days,
well,
but it's just been here.
When you work in the service industry, mm-hmm. you really don't.
Yeah.
Your restaurant is open.
Yeah, we closed Christmas Eve, and we, of course, were closed Christmas Day because it was on Sunday, but
well, I feel like we've talked about this already, and maybe on the air, stop me if we have, but there's a Netflix documentary, and you guys know that I have this strange affinity for true crime documentaries now. I can't imagine why. Look around. Don't pick up the phone.
Yes, that is probably the only real TV I watched during the break.
Did everybody see that?
That
did everybody scream at your fucking television set 5 minutes in?
That wore me out. That whole entire thing.
I felt like I had been dropped off of a 20-story building when that was over.
Mm-hmm. I kept having to research because I kept thinking this can't be true.
It can't be true, right? But it is.
But it is true.
And that, I'm not going to say another word. Just watch it.
When you finish this episode.
Don't pick up the phone. And it's not what you think. This is not some creepy.
It's not terrifying.
Teenage girl alone in her house thing.
Correct, like the old movie.
Yeah.
When a stranger calls.
He's calling from inside.
Yeah,
the house.
It's not that.
Right.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
It's not what you think.
It's a
Go
lot dumber
it.
Than that.
Go watch
and
it.
It really happened.
Wow.
All right. Wow. Should we just stop the whole thing right
no,
now?
No, we shouldn't, but everybody has
I feel like I need to go wash my hands.
Homework.
Homework. A lot. lot, which is what Katie loves to hear since she's in law school.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So this week to start season three with a bang, we gave Scott a lot of homework and said, here,
I sit here with a clipboard full of pages of notes, and I'm old school, and that's how I roll.
Yep. And we said, here, take this person and do this. And he was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So let's get to it, Scott.
All right.
Wait a minute.
I have two shout-outs.
Yes. Go.
All right. So first of all, Mike Odell, the retiring district attorney here in District 9 in the state of Alabama, which is Cherokee and
DeKalb County.
DeKalb counties. He just retired.
He was in season one.
He was on our show and did a great job. We are very loving of Mike, and he is going off to do other things now. And so a shout-out to Mike Odell, who was on the show and has been a great district attorney in this county for a long time.
Happy retirement.
Yes. And another guy, Henry Lohman. And all that I know about Henry Lohman is that he follows us on Facebook, and every time we post something, he likes it.
Henry,
if you're out there somewhere, reach out, send us an email, let us know a little bit more about you. But you seem like you're a fan of the show, or maybe you just have an itchy trigger finger and you like everything. I don't know. But reach out and let us know if that is not the case and you actually like the show, because everything that we post, Henry Lohman enjoys.
Well, thank you, Henry.
So shout out.
Thanks for being a fan.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. All right, Scott. Let's do this.
This is a tough one. Unfortunately, if we are going to be a true crime podcast, and we are going to ever increasingly complete a repertoire of true crimes, on occasion, it is necessary to include a story that has been done to death. And so this week, we are going to talk about John Wayne Gacy and the 33 murders that he committed. So what are the bullet points about John Wayne Gacy? If you're a true crime fan, you know this.
You've heard the name.
Basic level. Mm-hmm. So here are the bullet points. Killer clown. Chicago, 70s. Many of his victims were found buried in the crawl space beneath his house. At the time, no one had ever been charged with so many murders. And I mentioned Chicago, and we're going to start with that. Have you guys ever been to Chicago?
Yes.
I have not.
Chicago, yes. No. Chicago, no. I love to travel. I've been to Chicago half a dozen times in my life. And it turns out that I once spent an entire day in the neighborhood where John Wayne Gacy lived. I didn't know it at the time. My ex-girlfriend and I were walking out of the hotel. We asked the concierge, hey, what's a good place to listen to some jazz music and have a few drinks? He said, there's this great bar. You get on the L, you take the Lawrence stop on the red line, you walk 400 yards, and you'll be at the Green Mill. The Green Mill opened in 1907, and it was a place where in the 20s, Al Capone hung out there. Mm-hmm. They will show you the booth that he sat in where he could watch both doors so nobody could kill him with their gun.
Well, not in his back anyway.
Yes. There is absolutely no talking during the live jazz performances at the Green Mill.
Wow.
And they close every night at 1:11 a.m. On the nose. There are tunnels underneath the building that they used to use, the mobsters back in Prohibition, to move their liquor around, but you can't tour them, according to their website. But I didn't know that either at the time. But the Green Mill is 2.5 miles from where John Wayne Gacy's house was in the 1970s.
And
I have no idea.
You've been to this bar.
I have been there. I've got a photograph that I will show you that we will share on Instagram if anybody wants to see it.
You went to
the Green Mill.
You went to a non-talking bar?
How did you manage?
It was hard. You guys know me too well. Anyway, true crime fans that we are, So we've done Chicago several times on this show. We've done H.H. Holmes, and we've talked about his murder house. That was back in season one, the 1893 World's Fair. And he was a mass murderer at the time because nobody knew the term serial killer, which was not invented until the 80s, and we've discussed that as well on the show. And we've talked about prohibition and all that stuff. So a lot of crime in a big city like Chicago back in the day. Fast forward to 1966 on Chicago's South Side, and you will find mass murderer Richard Speck, who we have not discussed yet, but we might want to put on our list. Unless you guys think that what he did even is too grisly for the show, and I would not argue.
More to come on that.
Yes. And then to Northwest Chicago in the 1970s, John Wayne Gacy. A modern-day Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, if ever one existed on this fucking planet. Lots of times when Gacy's victims get mentioned, they are reduced to little more than a mugshot from a newspaper clipping. And as a mediocre journalist, I can tell you that it's hard to deal with that. I mean, you're trying to get away with telling a story about 33 victims. It's hard to not reduce them to a name and an age and a physical description and a photo and a hometown.
And a number.
And
victim,
a number.
Victim number one.
Exactly.
Victim number two, yeah.
And there are still five of those 33 victims who have never been identified.
Yesterday.
Wow.
I looked it up yesterday. There's still five.
And
the families
never,
don't want to come forward.
But he never.
He didn't know their names.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Well, okay,
all right. All of Gacy's victims were young men, teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Most had led fairly typical lives until the time they crossed paths with the killer clown of Chicago. They were sons, brothers, students, boyfriends. Some of them were sex workers. Some of them were just errant kids waiting for their next bus. And we're not going to tell you about all 33 of them, but we're going to tell you the stories about these victims. Because the story repeats itself over and over and over.
Okay.
The way that he found them, the way that he coerced them to come to his house.
Gotcha. Okay.
But before we do that, who was John Wayne Gacy exactly? He was born on St. Patrick's Day, 1942.
Oh, he shares a birthday with Kelly.
We have the same birthday. Oops. Except what year was he born?
1942. So he's 4 years older than you. Sorry, I didn't mean to get
that. Yeah, everybody knows my age now.
Yeah. No, she's much younger than that. He was the only son of a World War I veteran who was so happy to have a son. He had an older sister and a younger sister. So when John Wayne Gacy was born, he was named after the manliest man who ever lived.
John Wayne.
John Wayne. It was big on the silver screen in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Joanne was 2 years older, and Sister Karen was 2 years younger, if you're keeping score at home. But that does not come up again. John Stanley Gacy was a piece of shit.
Is that his father?
Yes.
Okay.
No matter what John Jr. did, it was never good enough for the old man. Never.
How many times have we heard
I know.
On this podcast?
I know.
It's
same thing.
Such a cliche.
Throw in the fact that John Sr. spent most of his evenings in the basement drinking away the horrible images of the trenches of Western Europe in World War I.
Ugh. Horrible.
And the fact that John Jr. was born with an enlarged heart that kept him on the bleachers when the other kids in the neighborhood were playing baseball, and what you got was an unhealthy father-son relationship, to say the least. I'm not trying to make excuses for the man that John Wayne Gacy became.
No.
But we've talked about this many times on this show.
We have. Many of our folks.
It takes a lot of these horrible things to happen for somebody to realize that they're capable or to be pushed into what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We're just trying to explain this. We're not trying to make excuses.
Absolutely.
A lot of kids get abused and they don't all grow up to be mass murderers.
No.
They're correct.
But definitely, John Wayne Gacy was abused by his father. So were his sisters. So was his mother. Her name was Marion. Doesn't matter. There's a story about one incident in the kitchen at the Gacy household, unprovoked outburst by Gacy Sr., that left Marion's teeth shattered.
Oh, my God.
The kids screaming in the kitchen, and a dinner plate lodged in the wall.
Wow.
In the plaster. The cops got called. There was a gun. John Sr. disappeared for a couple of days. And when he came back, everybody just pretended like it never happened. That's pretty much how it worked at the Gacy household.
Oh, gosh. Living in fear? Of course.
Living in fear.
Why in the world would you call him out on it when he came back?
Exactly. John Jr. was beaten at age 4 by his father with a leather strap for innocently rearranging metal parts in the basement that his father had laid out to build something. But John's 4 and he's playing with the parts and he got him out of order. Ass whipping.
Wow.
At four.
And according to the stories, and I admire this about John Wayne Gacy, if nothing else.
Oh, Lord.
I know, but he said, or his sister said, that he never cried. He never got beaten by his father when he cried. He held it in.
That sounds problematic in and
like
of itself.
Like a red flag.
Maybe so. But he didn't, he was like, you're not going to beat me. You're not going to win this. Okay. I'm going to show you.
Would he cry later?
Maybe. But his sisters always said the one thing that they remembered about the beatings that he got was that he never cried.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe he wasn't capable of crying.
Is that it? It's red flags flying.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, delete that.
No.
We're not deleting that.
Okay.
I'm just not so sure that... I mean, I understand what you're saying about...
To me, it was a pride thing.
You're not going to do this, but
yeah.
I'm thinking that it was more of a red flag
maybe
type
so.
Thing. Because,
yeah.
you know, when you're a young kid like that, it's...
Yeah, he's 4 or 5, 6
water,
years old.
The waterworks just happen,
yeah.
you know? So
not with him,
yeah.
according to his sisters.
Okay, so that's... Mm.
At age 7, John Jr. had a sexual experience with an older girl in the neighborhood that was not his fault.
Okay, well, at 7, I mean,
yeah.
How old's the girl?
I don't know, a few years older. And it's just, I don't want to say it's just kids playing around.
No.
Wondering what's going on in those parts
no.
of your body.
No.
But anyway, he got his ass beat for it. When Dad found out, he got another leather strap.
Okay.
And then there was the man next door.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Who was building a house in the lot beside the Gacy's home. And he always wanted to take John Jr. to go get ice cream.
Oh, no.
And Mom and Dad let him go.
Okay.
John Jr. never wanted to go.
Oh, Lord.
And he said years later, when he described this incident, that the man would always put his head between his legs and tell him that they were wrestling.
Yeah.
And so there's another scar that never healed.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Again, we're not making excuses. We're just trying to make you,
no.
give you an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. When Gacy was 8, his mother found a paper bag full of her underwear hidden underneath the front porch of the house. John Jr. said that he just liked the feel of the garments, but Dad did not want to hear that excuse.
Mm.
Another beating. From that point on, John Jr. was a mama's boy and a sissy to Dad.
Oh, gosh.
Heaven
forbid.
Right?
You know,
yeah. Like... But that particular beating did not stop John Jr. from continuing to enjoy his mother's undergarments. She just stopped telling Dad about it because she didn't want to see him beaten again.
Honestly, that's where mine went. Like, why'd she tell him?
The first time.
The first time she did. But
well,
she
you know you're
it.
Married to a crazy man.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I can't
I'm not,
shame her. But.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that to her. But that's another red flag. So far we've identified two red flags. In young Gacy.
Exactly. Years later, the chief psychiatrist for Gacy's defense would claim that his violent childhood was likely a motivating factor for his mental and emotional dysfunction as an adult. No shit, Dick Tracy.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, you didn't know where that was going.
Yeah, but again, you've brought this up. There are people who've gone through the same thing, very similar circumstances, and they never hurt anybody.
Yeah. Well, there are people who fall off a ladder and don't get scared of heights, and there are other people who fall off a ladder. You're looking at one who has never climbed more than 5 feet off the ground again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So everybody reacts differently to this sort of stimulus.
Yes.
And this is how John Wayne Gacy, unfortunately, reacted to his.
Yeah.
Although that same psychiatrist did say that he did not exhibit the three known markers of a serial killer. You guys want to take a shot at it? We've talked about them before. I had to look them up.
All right, go ahead with it.
Bedwetting.
Okay.
Setting fires.
Cruelty to animals.
Torturing small
animals. That's the only one.
And that's called the McDonald Triad. There was a 1963 study into commonalities and possible red flags for future serial killers. And those are the three. And we've talked about temper and...
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about bedwetting, every child has experienced bedwetting.
When
you're trying to potty train. Or when you're learning to sleep through the night, it happens at different ages for different kids, but when we talk about bedwetting, it's prolonged and it's they tend to be older.
Too old to be wetting the bed.
Yes.
12, 13, child. 14 yes. kind mm-hmm. of thing.
But Gacy did not have any of these.
He did not exhibit those three red flags of a potential future serial killer.
Okay.
And sure enough, after all of this happened, John Jr. did become a mama's boy. He stayed away from dad as much as possible. Hell, everybody in the family did.
Everybody
stayed away from dad.
Yeah.
John Sr. spent most of his time in the off-limits to everyone else basement, drinking his life away one bottle at a time. Whenever John Sr. bothered to stumble up the stairs, everyone in the room was either dumb or stupid or some combination of both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you were lucky, it was just the verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, while he was sitting on death row waiting for the lethal injection of chemicals that would take his life at the age of 52, Gacy still had nothing negative to say about the one man who never once had anything positive to say about him.
Wow. Still wouldn't trash talk his name.
I never hated my father, Gacy said. I could never please him, but I still loved him. My way to remember my dad was to not be like him.
Well
mission accomplished.
Yeah, I've been digging.
Yeah.
Wow.
At age 11, John Jr. was struck in the head by a swing set in a neighborhood playground. And for years after that, he suffered occasional blackouts. But John Sr. wasn't buying that. He was faking it. He was trying to get out of school. He was lazy. He was a mama's boy.
Okay, so there's a third red flag. We have identified.
We're running out of red flags.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody out there who makes red flags, send us another batch because we are out.
We're out. Did we not talk about another serial killer who had a head injury?
I think so, but I can't remember who it is. I thought that too.
We've talked about this before, but we'll figure that out.
But Gacy was 16 before doctors figured out that he had a blood clot.
Oh my God.
On his brain because of that swing set hit.
Mm-hmm.
And they cured him then, but he had the heart condition that I mentioned, and he had these fainting spells. So Gacy pretty much spent his entire life as a hypochondriac. He always thought something was wrong with him.
Mm-hmm. Well,
again, no excuse, but just another brick in the wall.
I mean, there kind of was.
Yeah, right? There was. Yeah. Absolutely. So Gacy, he got a little bit older, and he sort of seemed to find an even keel. As a teenager, he did well in science class and earned the respect of his other students and the teachers. He was always a hard worker. It's one thing that you will hear anybody who knew him as an adult say. He always worked really hard. He was always nose to the grindstone, doing the next thing. One high school friend even said that Gacy was a fantastic singer. Nothing ever came of that, obviously, but just, had talents. He just
took
the wrong path.
Because, when you associate when you hear John Wayne Gacy, you always associate the bad.
I know.
And I'm not trying to say he was good at all, but it's just weird to hear that he was a good singer.
I know.
Do you hear us?
No, yeah, I mean, like, but you know, we've had those couple of killers who sang in the courtroom.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah,
that guy wasn't that great. The Scream guy. No. Danny Rowling, not a good singer. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. But he did try.
Yeah, he tried.
He did try. Absolutely.
When other boys John's age were dipping their toes into the dating pool, he was working odd jobs, busy all the time. He was involved in local politics at a young age, even. He was the assistant precinct captain in his neighborhood, sort of like a junior mayor.
Okay.
Random.
Yeah. Which antagonized his father to no end, because to John Sr., anybody who was in politics was a crook. Okay. And so that made John Jr. think, oh, if Dad hates it, it's got to be a good idea. So all through his life, he was involved in politics, John Jr. was. There are no excuses for the way that John Jr. turned out, but I'm just trying to give you guys a little bit of a background that I feel like a lot of things don't do. There's a really good Netflix series. It's called the Murder Tapes, or the... It's a lot of it has conversations with John Wayne Gacy that were taped by his attorneys after he was arrested, mm-hmm. but before he was convicted. And it's on Netflix, and it's really insightful. There's a lot of good information there.
Did they do the same with
Dahmer?
Bundy.
With Ted, yes. Bundy?
Yeah. There are two or three episodes, or two or three different documentaries that have the same title.
Okay.
Yes, like the murder tapes of John Wayne Gacy. The murder tapes of Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy's, but yeah. I think that made me sick enough to not continue.
It's very insightful just to learn how this guy ticked. Mm-hmm. And I know that the story is not about John Wayne Gacy, it's about his victims, but I wanted to do it a little bit differently today and introduce you to this person.
But
so you can understand who he was.
I know the story of John Wayne Gacy's crimes and that sort of thing, and I've already learned some things today that I did not know. So,
oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, so this is kind of, you know, learning a little bit of something. And again, I know you've said this, and I don't think we need to say it again after this. We're not making excuses for him. We're just getting the story of John Wayne Gacy. This is his story right now.
Yeah. So... fast forward to when John Wayne Gacy is 19 years old. He's had enough of Dad.
Wow.
He's bought a... I know, right?
I'm glad it was like, finally. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's bought a car, and his dad has convinced him, look, you can buy this crappy car with the money that you've saved, or you can buy a nicer car that I will loan you the money for, but you have to pay me back. So it's just another episode, another instance of John Sr. putting his thumb on John Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But he falls. He's like, okay, fine. But after John Jr. falls one payment behind, Dad threatens to take the car away. And so John Jr. throws a bag in the back, doesn't even tell anybody he's leaving, and drives to Vegas from Chicago. And Route 66 begins in Chicago. I have seen the sign that says beginning of scenic Route 66. I've got a photo of it. In my photo album, it starts right there. It's right there on Michigan Avenue with the corner of Jackson, I think, Boulevard. So he jumps on Route 66, and he drives to Vegas.
Okay.
Takes him 3 days to get there. He leaves with $136. He's got $25. By the time he has a bad experience in one of the Fremont Street casinos. So he falls asleep in the car because he can't afford a hotel room. And a Las Vegas police officer sees him in the car and thinks he's distressed, calls an ambulance.
Mm.
John can't afford to pay for the ambulance. But that turns out to be fortuitous, because after he gets to the hospital and everything's over, he goes back to the ambulance service and says, hey, look, let me pay you back for this ambulance ride. They give him a job and ends up getting him another job. So he's in Vegas for 3 months at age 19, but he finally gets homesick again, and he wants to go back home. So he calls Mom, and Mom says, yeah, Dad says you can come back home. So he comes back home. But he didn't want to. He was just
I mean, he's homesick, but he doesn't want to go back.
Right.
Okay.
So he gets a job. And here's another thing about Gacy. He's a salesman. One of his biographers called him a con artist. He was so influential, he could just talk anybody into anything.
Well, I mean, he had obviously to have this trait to have so many victims.
So he got a job selling shoes at a department store. And within a few months, he was the manager of the department store's shoe department. That's who John Gacy was.
Yeah, he could be very charming.
Yes. And so he moved to Springfield, Illinois, when he got a promotion. And that's where he met his first wife. Her name was Marilyn. She was the daughter of a very wealthy businessman. 2 years later, in 1966, Gacy's new father-in-law buys 3 Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants. And they weren't KFC fast food places at the time. It was a big go-in-and-sit-down, eat-at restaurant.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But he needed somebody to manage them. And so John Wayne Gacy got the job. Father-in-law didn't like son-in-law.
Oh, he did not like
him. No. John Wayne Gacy said that my father-in-law was almost as bad as my real father. Another piece of crap that I could never please, that I could never satisfy in my entire life. But he loved his wife, and they had 2 kids together.
Okay.
And that was in 1966, and John Wayne Gacy was 24 years old. 2 years later, he had managed to lose it all. And we'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
This episode of True Crime on Easy Street is brought to you by The Chamber, reminding you to shop local. Scott, where's your favorite place to shop?
My favorite place in Cherokee County to shop is probably at Model T's Screen Printing and Custom Embroidery, since I work there. But they do a fantastic job, and so does every other business in Cherokee County.
We have so many.
And that's what The Chamber is very good at promoting.
We have so many wonderful small businesses here, and what they do is they will put money back into your community. They sponsor your teams, your clubs, your groups. They buy your tickets, your Boston Butts, whatever you're selling.
Chances on a motorcycle for chance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so when you shop local, you're giving money to those businesses that directly help.
Right back into the community.
Absolutely. So please remember, shop local, Cherokee County.
Yeah, Teresa and Joy do a fantastic job at the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. Check them out on the website and shop local. So you guys know that one of the sponsors of our True Crime podcast is the Cherokee Post-Herald, and we are conducting a subscription drive.
Yes.
We're doing the Bull Hard Cash Contest, and we don't have a winner yet. Most of the bowl games will have been played, except for the championship, by the time people hear this.
Yep.
But we've got dozens of entries. We're going to score those sheets after next week's bowl game, and we will announce the winner of the Bowl Hard Cash Contest exclusively at True Crime on Easy Street.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
I know, and if nobody calls in a week and that means they didn't listen, then we will call them. We are going to initially announce the winner exclusively next week right here on this podcast. So Bowl Hard Cash, $500. Thanks everybody for playing.
Good luck.
And guys, our final sponsor of this week's episode is Easy Street. And this week going on at Easy Street, Tuesday night, as always, is bingo. Wednesday night, we have our open mic night. Thursday night is trivia. Friday night, we have Jason Cameron. And Saturday night is Scott Thompson. So come on out and see us.
Jason and Scott are 2 fantastic musical artists. If you don't have anything else to do, and even if you do, cancel it and come and do that anyway.
Definitely.
You're awesome.
All right, and welcome back to True Crime on Easy Street. Scott, how did he lose it all?
John Wayne Gacy was 24 years old in 1966. He had moved to Waterloo, Iowa. That's where the KFC restaurants were located. He got hired as the manager by his father-in-law. He's married, he's got 2 kids, he's got a good job. But like I said a minute ago, his father-in-law doesn't like him. Dad knew something was weird about this guy. Mm-hmm. He said years later,
yeah.
Right?
something's not sitting right.
Something
about.
Is weird with this guy. Mm-hmm. You guys know what the JC's is? I had to look this up.
No.
It's like the Rotary Club or the Lions Club, but it's the JC's. It used to be called the Junior Chamber of Commerce. In 1950, there were 300,000 people in the country that were members of the JC's.
Okay.
And it was for young adults ages 18 to 40 who wanted to get involved in their communities.
So it's just a civic group.
It's like a civic group.
Okay.
Now it barely exists anywhere. There's a chapter in Mobile.
There used to be everywhere. Well, there used to be a chapter around here somewhere that did a haunted house, because I remember the JC's haunted house.
Okay, yeah, that sounds familiar, but I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, but that was years ago.
It used to be a really big thing, and so John Wayne Gacy got involved in the JC's in Waterloo, Iowa.
As a lot of young business managers do,
yeah,
that's not uncommon.
Like I said, it's called the Junior Chamber of Commerce. I mean, what do you do when you open up a new business here in Cherokee County? You join the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. Glad to have them as a sponsor.
Yes.
But, you know, that gets you involved in the community, and you know what's going on, and they have a monthly breakfast. And so I'm guessing the JC's was pretty much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, though. Curveball coming.
Okay.
So John Wayne Gacy was fantastic at recruiting new members to the JC's in Waterloo, Iowa.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Alcohol and pornography.
Well,
they called them stag films at the time. We call it porn today. But he would have events in his basement. He would invite people over, and they would plow them with alcohol and strippers and stag films and get you to sign up to join the JC's.
So they just have a bunch of men in a basement drinking beer and watching porn?
I know, it sounds terrific, right?
that's weird, yeah.
I didn't know that porn was something
that's a party favor. I have never in my life watched porn with a group of people.
Okay, well, that's learning more about Scott every day.
That's
not too much information, but it solidifies what I was saying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another red flag to me. Come on now.
Yeah,
group porno.
We are out of
previews.
Red flags at this point. Listen, there's five more coming.
Okay.
Anyway, so the JC's thing was something.
Hold up, I'm stuck on this. Like, what do you say when you're sitting in a basement watching porn with somebody? Like, what do you turn to the person and say to them?
Because they're like, hey, you ready to join the JC's now?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
having never done it myself, I have no.
Did those conversations go?
I mean, the strippers makes sense, but like.
Yeah, having strippers in the basement, I'm not. Okay, whatever. That's a part.
I know. I guess it's like having the game on. The TV
the
in the
game
corner,
on the
and nobody's
TV.
Paying attention, but it's there. I mean, I can't imagine
and
that
you're
it
just
was a quiet room and everybody
and
sat around
talking.
Theater style and critiqued the film.
Are you just bragging that you have these pornos, like, in your possession?
Is it like
you didn't just have the internet where you could just pull up whatever you want?
Yeah, I've got access to this stuff. I've got alcohol. The strippers are in the back. Sign up for the JC's one.
The porno is on the TV. Sign up to be a community member.
I don't know. I wasn't there, but I think you're getting to the crux of this.
I'm just really stuck on this detail, and I know I need to move on.
It's weird.
That's okay. I like it. I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, it's happening, so I may as well deal with it.
I'm so interested in knowing what kinds of conversations were being had.
Well, it was a good career move for Gacy.
I mean, you think about the conversation that
despite
you're having
the
about the JCs.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what we do. And then you think about a porno being on the TV in the background with the volume up.
I think maybe, I'm just guessing because I've never done it either. It really was just an accoutrement to the rest of the room. You just had something playing in the back.
Yeah.
With the volume down. It was just
Let's hope it was down.
A room full of guys.
Let's hope the volume was down.
Yeah. Just a room full of guys. And maybe at the time that was just, you know, window dressing in this room where you were talking about the JCs and having alcohol and I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I need to move on.
That's fine.
You're right. Okay. All right.
So Gacy was big in the JCs and that got him involved in the local community and it got him involved in politics. He gave away a lot of free chicken from the restaurant, which was a needle in father-in-law's side.
I was about to say, father-in-law's not happy with that.
But that's one of the things that he used to help his JC prowess, JC Jr. And a lot of the JC members, you go back and read the books that I have read in the last, God, it's been 4 or 5 weeks that I've been working on this. It's been a minute.
We kicked it
down the street. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot of the JC said, look, he was a terrific guy. He was a great member of the group. Some of them said he was a loudmouth. He was a braggart. He had sort of the big man complex. He wanted everybody to know how important he was. Mm-hmm. And so he bragged like that. And one biographer said that he was a con artist, that he could sell anything to anybody.
Definitely.
So you're getting this guy. You're starting to form an image of what this guy did.
Yeah.
He received a pin from the JCs for signing up 60 new members in 1967. And even better, he got a compliment from his father, who had come to visit from Chicago. And when he saw that John had a successful life and a family and a good job and was a pillar of the community, he got the only compliment that he ever got from his dad. But what nobody noticed about Gacy yet was his tendency to hire teenage boys to work at his Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants. Mm-hmm. That same basement became a haven for his employees. Girls were excluded. They weren't allowed. But if you were a teenage boy and you worked at one of John Gacy's KFC restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa, in the 60s, you had a free reign. You could come over and drink.
And alcohol was legal for what age in the 60s? Was it 18 and up?
I don't know when it was 21. Was it Reagan president when they made it 21?
I think so. But still.
So that was 80s.
A lot of these employees are still too young to be drinking.
Sure, of course.
Okay, there's another red flag.
Yes.
Oh.
But he invites them over, and the girls aren't allowed, and you can come over and hang out as long as you want. Don't tell mom and dad. But I have a secret basement hideout where you guys can come hang out when you're not working.
Okay, look, just public service, everybody. I don't know. No one has a secret basement hideout that is safe for you to go to and do things that you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
No one has this. And if they do...
And if they do...
Go the other direction.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, totally please.
Agree. Don't go to the basement, the carport, the shed, the whatever it is, and do things you're not supposed to do. Just don't do it.
Correct. And so the clock continued to tick on John Wayne Gacy's perfect life. His carriage turned into a pumpkin on May the 10th, 1968, when detectives from the Waterloo Police Department came knocking on his door and arrested him for sexually assaulting a teenage boy. The charge was sodomy, which is kind of a catch-all phrase.
Yeah. Yes.
So all the hard work that he had done for the JCs...
Yeah, that will ruin your JCs career, your management, everything.
That turned into a big mistake because the first boy that he was alleged to have done something inappropriate with was the 15-year-old son of one of his fellow JC members.
Oh.
That kid ended up in Gacy's basement with a stag reel playing on the screen and his pants around his ankles.
So, Gacy's not very smart.
It's so crazy. He seems like he's very smart, but when he gets into this Mr. Hyde mode...
Mm-hmm. When the eyes go black...
He just doesn't think ahead.
And
that is very, very menacing about how he ends up getting caught.
Now, that's been reported by someone
who... That's how he gets caught eventually.
His eyes went black
when
this would happen. It was like a switch was flipped.
Well, that's why he tried the insanity defense, right, Kate? We'll get into that next week. Mm-hmm. But, that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's how he tried to get away with it.
Wow.
So Gacy gave that kid $50 to keep his mouth shut. But that kid eventually told his dad about it.
Yeah.
And that got the police involved. And it was another kid that he had done the same thing with that got him arrested in May of 68. Because that kid's dad was even a bigger bigwig in the JCs than Gacy was. So that gets the cops involved, and then there's an arrest.
And as there should be.
Yes, as there should be, certainly. So The second sexual assault got him arrested in May of 68, like I said. By December of 68, he was sentenced to, he thought he was going to get probation. Because who cares? It's just a kid and it's just sex in the 70s, right? In the 60s. Oh. That's what he thought.
Yeah. Mm.
He got 10 years.
Good.
In state prison. Now, we all know that he did not spend 68 to 78 in a state prison, or we would not be sitting here today.
Right.
But within just a couple of weeks of that sentence being handed down, wife files for divorce. John Wayne Gacy never saw his two kids again.
Good.
First time to live.
Good.
Never.
Good.
So we're going to get a little bit more into Gacy's prison stint next week.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, what you need to know is this. He was a model prisoner for the 2 years that he spent at the Anamosa State Penitentiary in Iowa. Before long, he was running the prison kitchen. Remember, he's managed KFC restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
He is running the show for the entire time that he's there. Everybody likes the guy.
He's charming everybody.
Yes,
yeah.
He's bullshitting everybody about why he's there.
Everybody has, and then
I'm
the
sure
guards,
it was a mistake.
And
you know.
Well, he can't say that he sodomized a boy because they would beat his ass.
Yeah.
So he makes up something about pornography, illegal possession of pornography.
So if anything, it makes him look cool.
Yeah.
But then you got the guards, and I guess they're just forgetting because they know why he's in there.
Sure.
And so
I guess
he's just charming everybody to the point where they're forgetting that he sodomized two boys.
Right.
Wow.
And he continues his JC's recruitment efforts and wins an award for that while in prison. I'm assuming without the alcohol and the pornography.
How did the big wig allow this to happen in JC's?
I don't know.
Did he just join another
chapter? A prison chapter?
I think he created a prison chapter of the JC.
Oh, wow.
Just
how
he's working the system.
Oh,
I mean,
is this why the JCs is not around anymore?
Maybe so.
You could literally create a prison chapter.
In the Netflix documentary, it talks about how influential he was while he was the cook at the prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you wanted rat turds in your food, piss him off.
Yeah, I was about to say you have a lot of power.
Yeah. And the food was really good. Everybody loved the food at the prison. I mean, come on.
I don't know that I've ever heard a statement like that uttered.
No,
Everybody loved the food at the prison.
I know. Yeah, probably not.
No, never. No, never.
All right, strike that.
No.
No, I mean.
That's golden right there.
Anyway, so 2 years go by, and he's out. Gacy is out.
Charms his way right out.
He gets out. Two things happened in June of 1970.
Okay.
I turned 3 months old, and John Wayne Gacy walked out of prison a free man.
Oh, good.
It's completely unrelated.
I know.
Let's hope.
Yeah, let's hope.
All right.
So he moved. They let him do his, they let him serve his parole in Chicago. They let him move across state lines into Illinois, back where he's from. He moves in with his mother.
Oh.
Now, Gacy's father had died while he was in prison.
Okay, so that's why he was able to move in with his mother.
That was a huge sticking point, and I'll touch on that a little bit next week, and we're wrapping this up. Gacy got a job as a cook in a restaurant downtown in Chicago in the Loop, right, called Bruno's. Very close to the Greyhound bus terminal
in Chicago. A hunting ground.
Yes. It was a 5-story building. They tore it down in 1989. But when they built it in the 50s, it was as big as a city block. It was 5 stories tall. If you've ever been into Grand Central Terminal in New York, imagine something like that except for buses instead of trains, because buses were the way to get around in the 50s and 60s. It was starting to sort of decay in the 70s. The place had turned into, it was a commercial area in the afternoons, but at night, the area was overrun with junkies, sex workers, muggers, vagrants, and most notably, for the purpose of our story, teenage runaways. So Gacy patrolled this area. He pretended to be a police officer sometimes. Drove a black car with a spotlight. Had a badge that he would flash at people and say, "Hey, I'm a cop, get in the car." He wanted to have sex, random sex, with young boys. That was his thing. He was actually arrested in June of 1971 after he got to Chicago for impersonating a police officer and sexual battery. But to sing the first verse of a song that we will all know by heart sooner than later. Unfortunately, at that time in this country, if there was a sex crime involving two men, the police did not care.
Ugh.
So those charges were soon dropped.
Mm-hmm.
By the beginning of 1972, Gacy's parole was over. His criminal record had been sealed. He was 30 years old and engaged to be married to his second wife. But he still had that urge to have sex with young men. On January the 2nd of 1972, he could no longer contain that urge. For years after the killer clown was caught, detectives working the case called Gacy's first murder victim, the boy on the Greyhound bus, because that's the way Gacy referred to him, because he never bothered to learn his name. Our listeners will not have to wait quite as long to hear the rest of that story, because we will do it all for you next week.
Oh. It's like you know this is coming. We know the story. Yeah. We know how it ends. But we just see this. We're just.
I learned so much.
Oh,
that
we're just
I did
getting
not know.
To this, and we're like, can we just press pause and erase? Keep this from happening. But
I know.
Yeah. Scott, you did a fantastic job today. Thank you so much. I look forward to learning the rest of everything next
week. I'm not coming back next week.
And getting the
you
legal
haven't been fired
side.
Yet.
Yeah. Katie's going to break down the legal part, because one of the best parts of the story is the trial, because they go for the insanity defense. I don't want to spoil anything, but Katie's going to mop that up for us next week. But that's the best part of the story to me.
Yeah. It's going to be very enlightening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Visit truecrimeoneasystreet.com. What else?
I think you got it all.
Awesome.
Katie?
Leave us a review.
5-star review on Apple, iTunes, podcast, whatever it is.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.